characters and rules and all kinds of things. Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee are more afraid of them than me. And the bar is where these guys meet. It's their unofficial HQ. And what are they, exactly? The biggest far-right faction? So far, all talk, but that can't last forever. Okay. Tell Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee, we don't care who they bought their ID from. Tell them we won't ask again in exchange for an answer to one simple question. They gave the impression they picked out their new names themselves. One of them said, because he liked the sound of it. Ask them if that's true. Do they really get any name they wanted? Okay, Orozco said. I'll ask them. Anything else? Not right now. Are we in trouble? Don't worry, we're golden. If you get the guy, how hard can it be? Reacher hung up the phone and turned to face the room. By that point, lots of people were looking at him. Word had gotten around. There was a huddle at the street door and another at the back door. Both sets of guys were watching him, waiting for him, which meant the fight would be outside. He would leave and they would follow. If there was a fight, which was not certain. These were mostly above-average people. Above-average age, above-average weight. Heart attacks, just waiting to happen. Discretion would be the better part of valor for most of them. The exceptions were of no real concern. They were younger and a little fitter, but they were desk workers. Nothing to worry about. Reacher was a good street fighter. Mostly because he enjoyed it. He pushed off the wall and parted the crowd, chest out as straight and slow as a funeral march. No one blocked him. He made it to the street door. In front of it was a tight knot of six men, in their 30s, probably, and none of them slender, but desk workers. Their suits were shiny on the ass and the elbow. He could read their body language. They were set to let him pass, and then they would about turn fast and spill out behind him on the damp and shiny cobblestones. Reacher said, "You speak English?" One guy said, "Yes." "You ever wonder why? Why you speak my language and I don't speak yours?" "What?" "Never mind. What are your orders?" "Orders? If I wanted a parrot, I'd go to a pet store. Someone just told you to do something. Tell me what it was." "No." "Then I'll have to evaluate a large number of theoretical possibilities, one of which is you want a rumble on the sidewalk. Maybe that's not true at all. Maybe I've misjudged you terribly, but I'll have to err on the side of caution. You see that, right? It's my only sensible course of action. So, don't follow me out the door. Maybe all you want is a breath of air, but erring on the side of caution means I'll have to interpret it as a hostile act. Current NATO doctrine requires an immediate reaction with overwhelming force. I know you have a welfare state, but a hospital is still a hospital, no matter who pays for it. No fun at all. So my advice is to sit this one out."
"You're afraid of us?"
"Sadly, no. I'm trying to be fair is all. No reason for you to get hurt. If one of your bosses has a beef with me, send him out alone. I'll walk him around the block. We'll have an exchange of views. That way, everyone's a winner." No answer. Reacher pushed his way between the first guy and the second and pulled the door. He slid out around its swing and took two fast paces to the curb and turned around. No one followed. He waited in the gutter a whole minute, but no one came out. He turned his collar up against the nighttime mist and set out walking back to the hotel. From the corner, he saw the guy with the top hat was gone. The evening shift had ended, and the night shift had started. He slowed down and scanned ahead. Habit. There was a guy in a doorway on the other side of the street, barely visible. He was lit from the side, softly, in green, by a pharmacy sign 2 units further away. He was wearing a dark parka and a little Bavarian hat, probably had a feather in the band. He was watching the hotel. No doubt about that. He was face on to it, wedged in the doorway corner, white and a little stout, maybe 6 feet and 2'10", hard to say how old. Richard walked on, maybe part of a diplomatic protection team, a courtesy from the German government. Maybe they had found out Sinclair was in town, or maybe Bishop had sent the guy from the consulate, a third under-deputy for cultural affairs with brass knuckles in his pocket, trained under the previous system. Richard walked on, looking at nothing in particular, with the guy in the corner of his eye. But then a car turned in from the four-way up ahead, and bright headlights came straight at him, fast and dazzling, a big vehicle pattering over the cobblestones. The car stopped alongside him, a Mercedes, a department Mercedes. Griezmann, who buzzed the passenger window down and said, "Get in. I've been calling you. I thought you must be asleep with the phone turned off. I was coming to wake you up." Reacher said, "Why?" "We saw Wiley." Reacher glanced up. The man in the doorway was gone. "Get in," Griezmann said. Reacher did. Chapter 25. Griezmann took off fast, his seat back yielding and groaning under the sudden acceleration. He said one of the cops in one of the unmarked cars parked at the bar earlier in the evening had been a night shift guy, brought in early on overtime rates of pay, and therefore still on duty, still on his regular watch, still with the sketch of Wiley on the seat beside him. He had been cruising the western edge of St. Pauli, and he had seen a guy he swore matched the sketch, carrying a bottle-shaped carrier bag from an all-night wine store, walking south toward the water. Richard said, "When?" 20 minutes ago. "How sure is he?" "I believe him. He's a good cop." Traffic was light, but the road surface was slick, and most other drivers were heading home from bars, so Griezmann wasn't as fast as he might have been. But even so, they got where they were going within 10 minutes. They stopped between high buildings, 20 yards short of a crossroads. Griezmann said the possible Wiley had been seen crossing the street, up ahead, walking right to left from the cop's point of view. Now, 30 minutes ago, in total. In that direction lay huge new apartment blocks, a brand new residential development, immense, on reclaimed land, from when the docks moved downriver in search of more space. There were thousands and thousands of separate addresses. Reacher said, "Rentals, right?" Griezmann said, "You think he lives, sir?" "He was carrying a bottle of wine, conceivably taking it to a party, but more likely taking it home, given the late hour." Reacher looked the other way to his right. He said, "I bet I know what he bought. Let's go find the store." The store was a clean, well-lit place with what looked like a fine selection of wines, red, white, rosé, and sparkling, including a shelf of lower-priced items for folks who didn't live in brand-new residential developments. The clerk was an amiable old guy of about 60-something. Reacher took his copy of Wiley's sketch from his pocket, and the old guy confirmed it immediately. The man in the sketch had been in the store about 40 minutes previously. He had bought a bottle of chilled champagne.
"He's celebrating," Reacher said.
"Credit card?"
Griezmann asked.
"Boy, he paid cash," the clerk said.
Reacher looked at a plastic bubble on the ceiling above the clerk's head. He said,
"Is that a security camera?"
The clerk said it was, and it fed a VHS recorder in the back room. Griezmann knew how to work it. It gave a decent black-and-white picture, looking down from behind the clerk's shoulder. The angle was wide. It was a dual-purpose installation. Customers were clearly visible, but so was the register drawer, in case the clerk was skimming. Griezmann wound the tape back 40 minutes, and Wiley came in right on cue. No doubt about it. The hair, the brow, the cheekbones, the deep-set eyes. He looked dead on, average height, but scrawny, in a hard scrabble kind of a way. He moved with energy and purpose, and confidence, almost a swagger. Physically, he looked athletic. Not bouncy like a kid, but trained and mature. He was 35 years old, like Reacher himself, all grown up. On the tape, Wiley stepped over to a chiller and opened the glass door and took out a dark bottle with a thin neck.
"Dom Perignon," Griezmann said. "Not so cheap."
Wiley carried the bottle to the register and took crumpled bills from his pocket. He counted them out, and the clerk made change with coins. Then the clerk put the bottle in a bottle-shaped bag, and Wiley carried it away. 37 seconds, beginning to end. They watched it again. The same things happened.
"Now show me the neighborhood," Reacher said.
They got back in the car, and Griezmann drove south, pattering slowly over the cobblestones, following what must have been Wiley's earlier route, past where the cop had seen him, between scarred brick warehouses, and eventually to a brand new traffic circle that led left or right or straight ahead into the new development's feeder roads. Griezmann stopped the car. The engine idled, and the wiper flopped back and forth about once a minute. Reacher looked ahead. He could see 100,000 windows. Most were dark, but a few were lit. He said,
"Are these places expensive?"
Griezmann said,
"All of Hamburg is expensive."
"I'm wondering how Wiley pays the rent."
"He doesn't. No one named Wiley is registered here. We already checked."
"We think he's using a German name."
"That would make a difference."
"Possibly when he shows himself."
"Does he offend you?"
"He's betraying his country, which is also mine."
"Do you love your country, Mr. Reacher?"
"Major Reacher."
"Perhaps that answers my question."
"I prefer to think of it as healthy yet skeptical respect."
"Not very patriotic."
"Exactly patriotic. My country, right or wrong, which means nothing unless you admit your country is wrong sometimes. Loving a country that was right all the time would be common sense, not patriotism."
Griezmann said,
"I'm sorry your country is having these troubles."
Reacher said,
"Do you love your country?"
"It's too early to say. It was only 50 years ago. We changed more than any other country has ever changed. I think we were doing okay, but the people from the East have set us back. Economically, of course, and politically. We are seeing things we haven't seen before.
Like the bar Helmut Klopp called you from."
"We have to bide our time. We can't arrest them for thought crimes. We need actual crimes."
Reacher said,
There was a guy watching my hotel. He left when you showed up.
Not one of mine, Griezmann said.
Federal?
No reason. I haven't reported Dr. Sinclair's visit. Not yet. No one knows she's here. She's registered under a different name.
Richard said nothing. Griezmann said,
Did you run the fingerprint?
Richard said, Yes, I did.
And?
You can call it a cold case now. It will never be solved.
What does that mean?
It means I know who it was, and I won't tell anyone.
But I helped you.
I know you did, and I thank you.
Do I get nothing in return?
She was a very expensive hooker. Her client list was, therefore, of interest. But I won't tell anyone about that, either.
Griezmann was quiet a beat. Then he said,
It's the CIA. I was of interest?
Reacher nodded. To the part that was trained under the previous system.
You're going to blackmail me.
Not my style. I already said I won't tell anyone. No strings attached. Whether you choose to keep on helping me is entirely up to you. If you do, I'll take it as two simple detectives getting along. Nothing more.
Griezmann paused again.
I wish to apologize, he said. I'm not the man you thought I was.
Doesn't matter to me, Reacher said.
I don't know why I did it.
I'm not your shrink.
But I would like to know why.
Was she cute?
Incredible.
There you go.
You think it's that simple?
I'm a military cop.
Griezmann said,
I'll help you, if I can.
Thank you.
What do you need?
You could tell your night shift guy to spend the rest of his watch right here. It's a bottleneck. Wiley might come through again. If so, arrest him for walking while foreign. Keep him in the car until I get here.
There are many other ways out of the complex. There are cycle paths and footbridges at the back, and a big bridge to the bus stop on the main road.
We might get lucky. He might want more champagne.
Tell me one thing about the man whose identity you are concealing. Will he be punished?
Yes, Reacher said. He will.
That's good.
You liked her, right?
Griezmann said.
I'll drive you back to your hotel.
Wiley gave the champagne 30 more minutes in the refrigerator, and then he peeled off the foil wrap and eased out the cork with his thumbs, slowly and gently, until it made a polite little puck and fell to the floor. He poured a glass, which had also gotten 30 minutes in the refrigerator, and he carried it to his table, where his map of Argentina was spread out. The outline of his ranch was rubbed greasy by his fingertips. Truly, his ranch now. Or soon, when the money reached Zurich and left again, or more precisely when some of it left again, not all of it. He had liked the girl they sent with the message. Sir, what I am permitted to know is, we accept your price. She was polite. Kind of deferential, like when she popped the third button. There would be girls like that in Argentina. Dark, like her. Shy, but with no other choice. He got up and refilled his glass. He held it high, as if toasting a cheering crowd of thousands. Horace Wiley from Sugar Land, Texas. King of the world. Reacher listened at Sinclair's door and heard talking, so he knocked, and she said, Come in. Nagley was there, and Bishop from the consulate, the head of station. Sinclair was sitting on the bed, and Bishop and Nagley were in the green velvet armchairs. Nagley had handwritten notes in her lap. Reacher said, "Progress?"
"You?"
"I think he lives in an apartment complex near the waterfront. One of Greaseman's guys got a glimpse of him. He was out buying champagne."
"Celebrating," Bishop said.
Reacher nodded. "We should assume the negotiation is over. We should assume they agreed to the price. The wheels are in motion."
"How big is the apartment complex?"
"Huge."
"Paper trail?"
"Nothing in the name of Wiley."
"Is he in there now?"
"Almost certainly."
"We should lock the place down."
"There's an unmarked car at the main exit. That's the best Griezmann can do. He was already paying overtime earlier in the day."
Nagley said, "It appears Wiley has no uncles. The witness who mentioned one has been ordered here for further questioning. Landry is working on possible great-uncles and the mother's possible boyfriends. The latter could take some time."
"Okay," Reacher said.
"And I spoke to his COs from Benning and Sill. The guy from Benning doesn't remember him at all. The guy from Sill does. He said it was clear Wiley wanted to do his tour in Germany. He was fixated on it. He aimed for it. Every qualification he took narrowed his choices."
"The guy remembers all that, 3 years later?"
"Because they had a long conversation at the time. The CO pointed out the consequences of the drawdown. A dead end, a black hole, and so on and so forth. Wiley said he wanted to go anyway. He wanted to serve in Germany."
"So it was a long game," Sinclair said from the bed. "Now we're trying to figure out what."
Reacher said, "There was a guy watching this hotel an hour ago. He disappeared when Griezmann showed up."
"Not one of mine," Bishop said.
Muller called Dremler at home again and woke him up. It was very late, or very early, depending on which direction a person was facing. Dremler composed himself, and Muller said,
"Reacher got back to this hotel before 1 in the morning, but Griezmann came by and picked him up before he went inside. I got out of there real quick, in case Griezmann recognized me."
"What did Griezmann want?"
"One of my traffic cars heard it on the radio. The American they're looking for was seen in St. Pauli. His name is Wiley. Griezmann's men have Klopp's police sketch in their cars."
"Any other details?"
"One of my guys just checked the car and there's no parking zone near the water, near some new apartments. It was one of Griezmann's detectives in an unmarked unit watching for Wiley. My guy asked why, and they talked for a minute. Just blue-to-blue gossip. Griezmann's guy didn't know the details, but he said it was obviously some heavy-duty thing. His orders came through flagged red."
"What does that mean?"
"It used to mean organized crime, but now it means terrorism. The guy wasn't clear whether it was supposed to be an old red or a new red. There's some confusion at the moment. But I think it was a new red, because they were also watching an apartment near Reacher's hotel earlier in the day. There was supposed to be a Saudi guy coming out, but it didn't happen. I checked the city records, and there's an apartment in that building with 3 Saudis and an Iranian, all young men. I think this is some kind of Middle East thing."
"Is Wiley in the city records?"
"No trace."
"Klopp says he saw him in the bar more than once. Maybe someone there knows him."
"Maybe," Muller said.
Dremler said,
"We need you to get us a copy of Klopp's police sketch."
Nagley left, and then Bishop. Reacher took an armchair. Sinclair stayed on the bed.
she said.
Waterman and White will be here tomorrow morning, and Landry and Vanderbilt. I relocated the whole operation. This is where the action is. We'll work out of the consulate.
Okay, Reacher said.
What are you thinking about?
Right now?
Yes.
Work life or personal life?
You can think about both at once.
Most of the time.
Okay. Work first.
Wiley's hair.
What about it?
It's a way in. Possibly. He didn't cut it. He let it grow.
Maybe he was worried a barber would remember.
He could have done it himself. He shaved the sides every day. He could have shaved it all and started over. But he didn't.
Why not?
I think there's a vanity to him, a kind of flamboyance. He likes Davy Crockett. Maybe he's growing his hair long so he can buy a fringed suede jacket and be the king of the wild frontier. The way he moved on the tape was interesting. He's a small guy, but he swaggers. He's got it going on. And he bought expensive champagne. I think he likes grand gestures, which, combined with the $100 million, doesn't make me feel good. It makes me feel like something huge is coming. Sinclair was quiet for a moment. Then she said,
What about personal life?
Reacher smiled. He said, You walked right into that one.
Which one?
Same exact answer, he said. I feel like something huge is coming.
I'm counting on it, she said.
Chapter 26. When they woke up, Reacher went back to his own room and showered and dressed again. He took the stairs down to breakfast alone. The four guys from McLean were in there already after their overnight flight. Waterman, White, Landry, and Vanderbilt. Nagley was with them. They looked tired. She didn't. Landry said he had traced the great uncles, but the news was not good. Most were long dead, and none had lived near the kid growing up. There was no evidence of contact, not even circumstantial. They were not necessarily the visiting type. Two had done prison time. Extended influence was thought unlikely. But Waterman had better news. He said Wiley's mother had been located and had agreed to an interview about her old boyfriends. She was living in New Orleans on welfare. The local field office had been alerted. Agents would be dispatched. First results were expected in 7 or 8 hours because of the time zones. White didn't look happy to be there, the CIA guy. His hair looked longer than ever. He looked thinner. He was twitching and writhing and wringing his hands and squinting. Reacher said, What? White said, They really need to get the Iranian out. None of this comes from a messenger. We missed her completely. Ratcliffe thinks too narrowly. If something bad happens to them in the city of Hamburg, their inquisition will range far and wide. Everybody will be a suspect. They aren't dumb. They'll deduce the facts. How many variables are there? Two different messengers, but only one house? The Iranian will last less than 5 minutes. You should talk to Bishop. Bishop runs the kid, but he doesn't have the authority to pull him out. He must have. Not for big picture reasons. Imminent danger only. Which you think is now. It will start the same minute you get your hands on Wiley. The minute their deal falls apart. Which will be when? Soon, I hope. Exactly. You should talk to Bishop, Reacher said again. Then Sinclair came in. Black dress, pearls, nylons, shoes. Her hair was damp. Landry and Vanderbilt made a space, and she sat down. She said,
I talked to Mr. Ratcliffe. We're assuming the negotiation phase is over and the delivery phase is about to begin. so we need to know what, where, and when.
The messenger could be home already, Nagley said. She might have flown direct, or nearly. Then they'll send a messenger to Switzerland, because they don't trust the phones. With the account details and the passwords, the transaction might take an hour or two. Could happen tomorrow.
Or a year from now, Vanderbilt said. Are they ready to act? Do they have the money?
Wiley can't wait another year, Waterman said. He's already been on the run 4 months. Not easy. A lot of stress and a lot of risk. He needs to get settled. I think this will happen fast now. Tomorrow, or the next day, or the day after that. I'm sure the money is lined up and ready to go, probably in the same bank. Different blips in the same computer.
Okay, Sinclair said. So it's what, where, and soon.
The where depends on the what, Richard said. If it's intelligence or a document, they might do the handover right there in the banker's office. If it's a big thing, right now it must be stored or hidden somewhere in Germany, so they'll have to send a crew over to haul it away.
We should watch the bank, Waterman said.
Don't know which one. They have hundreds.
The airports, then, here and Zurich.
Landry said, the easiest way would be to figure out what he's selling.
No shit, Nagley said. Must be something.
But what? He can't go get it now. He would be arrested immediately. Therefore, it was stolen or otherwise obtained more than 4 months ago, except nothing was reported missing.
White said, we need to get the Iranian out.
Not yet, Sinclair said.
Then when?
Talk to Mr. Bishop. We're heading for the consulate now. He set up an office for us. Be in the lobby in 10 minutes.
Mueller walked up the fire stairs to Griezmann's floor. It was still early, before 8 o'clock. No one was in. The secretarial stations were still deserted. Griezmann's secretary's in-tray looked like it had before. Mueller had replaced the papers carefully. Nothing suspicious. Where was the sketch? Presumably, the American investigators had taken as many copies as they wanted. Griezmann himself might have taken a couple more to start a cover-your-ass file of his own. He would have stored the originals somewhere safe, in a special drawer, perhaps. He might have dozens of sketches, a whole category. It was a detective bureau, after all. But where?
There was a side-to-side line of drawers behind the secretary's ergonomic typing chair. They formed the base of a wall unit with shelves above. Mueller slipped in behind her desk and bent down to take a look. None of the drawers was labeled. He backed out and glanced through Griezmann's door, the inner sanctum. There were identical drawers inside, but with no shelves above, like a credenza, with framed photographs on it, of a woman and two children, Griezmann's wife and kids, no doubt, plus a statuette trophy for something or other, probably nothing athletic, given the size of the guy. There was another line of file cabinets on the wall opposite, a total of 20 drawers inside the room and 4 outside, an inconvenient ratio. Mueller made a deal with himself. A 1 in 5 chance of success was better than a 4 in 5 chance of losing his job. He was useful where he was, in the long term, in the big picture. That fact had to be weighed in the balance. Therefore, he would search the secretarial station, but not Griezmann's office itself. A sensible compromise. He slid in again behind the secretary's desk. He would go left to right, he figured. A quick look. A sketch should be easy to spot. Probably done on thick paper from an art store. Possibly a non-standard size. Probably cased in a plastic page protector. He bent down. A woman's voice behind him said,
Hello?
Surprised and a little quizzical, Mueller straightened up and turned around. Griezmann's secretary. He said nothing. The woman dumped her purse on her desk and shucked off her coat. She hung it on a hook and bustled back. She said,
Can I help you, Deputy Chief Mueller?
Deputy Chief Mueller didn't answer. The woman said,
Are you looking for something?
A sketch, Mueller said.
Of what?
Mueller paused a bit, thinking. Then he said, There was a traffic accident late last night. My division is handling it naturally. A cyclist was knocked down, hit and run. The driver didn't stop. The cyclist's companion gave us a pretty good description, a distinctive face and an unusual hairstyle.
How can we help you?
By a coincidence, my officer had just seen one of Chief Griezmann's officers about an hour before. My officer thought it was illegal parking, but it was actually a stakeout. Chief Griezmann's officer had a sketch in his car of an American named Wiley. Later, my officer remembered it and realized it was exactly the same face as was being described to him there and then by the cyclist's companion.
Griezmann's secretary said, I see.
Therefore, I need to show your sketch to our witness for confirmation.
I would be happy to give you a copy.
Mueller said, If it's not too much trouble.
None at all.
Thank you very much. The woman ducked into the inner sanctum, and Mueller heard a drawer roll open. Then she came out again with a sheet of thick paper and a plastic page protector. She switched on her Xerox machine. Mueller heard clicking and ticking and smelled hot toner. He heard the elevator door thump open. He saw two more secretaries step out. Purses, coats, brisk morning motion. Both walked past, smiling and polite, ready to get to work. Griezmann's secretary raised the Xerox machine's lid and placed the sketch face down. She touched a button. The machine whirred. A copy came out. The elevator door opened again. Not Griezmann, just a man in a suit. Mueller knew him, vaguely. The man nodded good morning and walked on by. Griezmann's secretary handed the copy to Mueller. It was done with colored pencils. A scrawny man with a prominent brow and prominent cheekbones and deep-set eyes and long yellow hair. Mueller said, Thank you, and walked away, down the hallway to the fire door and down the fire stairs to his own floor and his own hallway and his own office, where he immediately set about creating a phony log entry about an injured cyclist and a hit-and-run driver, just in case Griezmann checked. Reacher and Nagley went straight to the lobby. Nagley said, We need to get Wiley's movement orders, all of them. That's the key to this thing. He's been in country a little over 2 years and AWOL the last 4 months, which gives us a critical period of a little under 2 years of active service, during which envelope of time he saw something and planned and then stole it. So we need to know exactly where he's been, day to day from first to last, because at least one day he was right next to it, whatever it is, maybe even touching it, physically adjacent.
Minimum of one day, Reacher said. The day he was stealing it.
I think 2 days minimum, Nagley said. First he saw it, and then he figured it out, and then he came back to steal it.
Except he didn't see it. Not exactly. He found it. He located it. This is a long game. He came to Germany to get it. He knew about it ahead of time.
Either way, maybe more so. There was a physical encounter.
I want to know how he's paying his rent, Reacher said. He's a private soldier. He doesn't have a savings plan. See if the movement orders overlap with any kind of cold case property crimes. He got his seed money somehow.
And then the clerk at the desk answered a ringing telephone and pressed the receiver to her bosom and called out,
Major Reacher, it's for you.
It was Orozco calling from a cellar somewhere, judging by the sound. Orozco said, Are we in trouble? We're good, Reacher said, currently saving the world.
Until we don't.
In which case, it won't matter anyway. I just got through talking with Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee. They confirmed they could pick any name they wanted for the phony ID, but it had to be German, in case there was a random check inside the division. It was felt foreign names would stand out. But any German name was okay, whatever they wanted, whatever sounded good or meant something to them.
Okay, thanks, Reacher said. Gotta go.
His back was against the counter, and he could see out through the glass part of the front door. There was a guy in a doorway, across the street. Reacher hung up the phone. He caught Nagley's eye and pointed. She lined herself up with the sliver of view. She said,
I see him. I'd not to.
Let's step out for some air. Nagley went first, and then Reacher, and the guy in the doorway startled, and then made an elaborate show of yawning and stretching and sauntering away on the opposite sidewalk, slowly, as if he had all the time in the world. Nagley said,
Shall we see where he's going?
They kept pace, 10 feet behind, 2 lanes of morning traffic between, as the guy strolled along. He had a wool coat and no hat. He was solidly built. He was bigger than Nagley and smaller than Reacher. He turned right at the four-way. Reacher and Nagley crossed at the light and caught up again to 10 feet behind. The guy turned right again into an alley between buildings.
A trap, obviously, Nagley said. Probably a closed courtyard. No wonder the guy was easy to see. His job was to bring you here.
Me?
The guy wasn't Griezmann's, and he wasn't Bishop's. So who was he? Orozco just told us this place is mobbed up. I'm sure Helmut Klopp is a founding member. He knows what we look like, and he knows our names. You made 4 of their foot soldiers cry when we were here the first time. Now they want a do-over.
You think they're still mad about that?
Probably.
How big do you think the courtyard is?
I'm no architect, but maybe 30 by 30, like a large room.
How many guys do you think they brought?
6, minimum. 7, with the guy who led you here.
Led us here?
Until I halted the advance. A sergeant's first duty is to keep her officers safe.
Is that what they teach you?
Between the lines.
Works for me, Reacher said.
We should head back.
Maybe you're wrong.
I don't think I'm wrong.
Maybe it's a residential courtyard, low-income housing, some kind of an inner-city thing, rooms without a view, the kind of place you live if you're out of work. Which at least leaves you free all morning to stand in a doorway across the street from a hotel.
You think he was going home?
I think I should go find out.
It's a trap, Reacher.
I know it is, but we need to make them worried about us. We need to keep the pressure on. We might need to make them give up the passport seller. I'm sure he's one of them. We need Wiley's new name. That might be the only way of getting it. Give me 2 minutes exactly. If I'm not out already, feel free to come on in and lend a hand.
Chapter 27 Reacher walked on and turned in at the alley. It was about 3 feet wide. like a mean hallway in a cheap apartment. Up ahead was a rectangle of light, morning shade and sandstone colors. No people. They would be flat against the wall, either side of the alley mouth. Reacher walked on in the dark, trailing his fingertips against the stone on both sides to keep himself centered. His footsteps were loud, and a strange quacking echo came first off the walls and then off the roof. Up ahead, nothing changed. Morning light and painted concrete, fleshy colors, bright and clean. Bricks underfoot like some of the sidewalks, no physical obstructions, no well heads or water pumps, all 1950s modernity. Reacher walked on. Then, 3 paces from the end of the alley, he broke into a run and burst out into the courtyard, moving fast all the way to the center where he jammed to a stop and spun around. 8 guys, all still pressed flat against the wall, all evidently expecting a more cautious approach. 4 of them were the 4 from outside the bar the first time. Germany is for Germans. They looked partially recovered. 3 of the others looked similar, but as yet undamaged, and possibly older on average, possibly selected on merit. 1 had nothing in his hands. 1 had a baseball bat. 1 had a broken bottle. Brown glass, jagged, like a miniature crown. That guy would go down first, Reacher decided. The bat guy could wait. A bat was no use in a melee. The first 4 would hang back, once bitten, twice shy. The decoy from the doorway wouldn't fight at all, not his job. So it would be 3-on-1 initially. Not a huge problem. After that, who knew? The guy with the bat moved first, which was dumb but predictable. It was the biggest weapon. It set the tone. But it was useless on the run. No one could get a hit while simultaneously sprinting down a track. Not Babe Ruth, not Joe DiMaggio, not Mickey Mantle, not even Ted Williams at his finest. Wasted effort, but indicative of an attempt at tactics. The idea seemed to be the bat would knock Reacher down, and then the guy with the bottle would follow up, leaning down, jabbing and twisting, which meant the bottle guy was on the move very early, just 2 steps behind the bat guy's shoulder, ready for his moment of glory, looking for all the momentum he could get. But momentum was a 2-way street. Reacher sidestepped the guy with the bat and met the guy with the bottle head-on, 2 opposing masses colliding at high speed like a wreck on the highway. Reacher was watching nothing but the bottle, which was out in front and coming up in a panic toward his face in the guy's right hand, which made it purely a question of approximate timing, easier than hitting a baseball. Reacher swept his left forearm up, inside out, like a guy shooing a wasp at a picnic, and it hit the bottle guy's right forearm somewhere along its length, so that the bottle's trajectory was slammed up and out, harmlessly over Reacher's left shoulder, which left time and space for Reacher's right elbow to hook around and smash the guy full in the face, which, because of all of the kinetic energy, was more or less like a stick of dynamite going off in the guy's mouth. He went down faster than gravity, and Reacher turned and stomped on the bottle so no one else could use it, and then he started back toward the guy with the bat, who had spun off uselessly behind him. Reacher decided he wanted the bat. The guy planted his feet and started to drop into a crouch and started to pull the bat back, low, more like a tennis swing than a baseball swing, like setting up for a cautious 2-handed backhand return of serve, or a long drive off a golf tee, all his momentum cocking back and back and back, ahead of eventually pulling the trigger when Reacher arrived within range, which made it another question of approximate timing. The only way to defend against the swing of a bat was to get there early, ideally before the swing had even started, or worst case, in its first foot or so, where it would still be weak and slow, no more than a soft lateral thump, like walking into a fence rail at night. Getting there early required sudden acceleration, which was not easy for a guy built like Reacher, but which came naturally on that occasion, because of motivation, because of the difference between a soft lateral thump and a broken femur or arm or ribs. Reacher exploded at the guy and got there 3 inches into the bat's forward swing, which gave him time to catch its sweet spot in the meat of his palm and jerk it away, and add his other hand, and stab the knob of the handle at the guy's head like a rifle butt, and connect, like a ferocious punch through a single knuckle. The guy went down sideways, and Reacher spun around, looking for the next target, which presented itself immediately in the form of the third new guy rushing in, unarmed, his hands up and open as if he was aiming for a wrestling hold. Reacher swung the bat the wrong way around, like a bad switch hitter flailing at a high fastball. A swinging strike, for sure. Except the third new guy was a lot bigger than a baseball, so a perfect aim was not a crucial requirement. Anywhere between the chest and the head was a bullseye. The elbow, the upper arm, the neck, the skull, or all four at once, which is what happened. The guy brought his arm up to protect his head, and the bat caught his elbow and his triceps, which impact smashed the heavy bone of his upper arm backward into the point of his jaw, where his neck met his skull, which dropped him to his knees. But the lights stayed on, so Reacher swung again, this time properly right-handed. Probably good enough for nothing more than a fly ball at a July 4th picnic, but more than adequate against human biology. The guy rocked sideways and then flopped forward on his face. By that point, the clock in Reacher's head told him the fight had been running a little over 4 seconds. The decoy from the doorway was still plastered against the wall. Not his business. The four sides of beef from the first bar were lumbering into action. They had broken raggedly from their concealed positions and were haphazardly placed. No rhyme or reason, just random, which was a problem. The first two would be easy, the third would not be difficult, but the fourth would be a problem. Reacher could see that. Time and space and movement. Like astronomy. Like planets on collision courses, orbits and angles and relative speeds. The fourth guy would come pressing in before the third guy was down. No other possibility. It was in the way their centers of gravity were moving. There was no logical sequence beyond 1, 2, 3, no matter where a person started. All of which made Reacher regret he had told Nagley 2 minutes exactly. He still had 1 minute and 55 seconds to go, with no logical way of surviving, against vengeful opposition. He should have left it to her discretion. She would have entered the alley as soon as she was sure attention was focused ahead, which meant right then she would be already waiting in the shadows of the alley's mouth, watching, doing the same instinctive calculations he was doing, and therefore ready to step in and put a wrench in the fourth guy's works. A sergeant's first duty is to keep her officer safe. Maybe she had disobeyed him. Which, of course, she had. He launched against the first two, using the bat like a fist. 1, 2, forehand, backhand, thinking ahead, lining up for the third guy, executing the pivot with speed and grace and economy. But even so, the fourth guy came pressing in way too early, as predicted,
just half a step behind. By blind luck, time to arrive just before the bat could start moving again. But then the fourth guy disappeared, like he had run full speed into a clothes rope, like a special effect in a movie. One frame he was there, and the next he was gone. The third guy went down, and behind him, Reacher saw Nagley, following through from what looked like a roundhouse rabbit punch to the fourth guy's throat. The decoy from the doorway raised his hands. Reacher said, "Thank you, Sergeant." Nagley said, "You should have picked up the bottle better than the bat." Reacher walked over to the decoy and said, "Tell your boss to stop wasting my time. Tell him to come see me himself, one-on-one. I'll walk him around the block. We'll have an exchange of views." Then they left, back down the alley to the street. First Nagley, then Reacher. They stood in the sun and shrugged and straightened, and then they hustled back to the hotel. Chapter 28. They were late back to the hotel. The others were waiting. Bishop had sent a little bus, like an airport shuttle. They were all in their seats, all watching out their windows. Waterman, Landry, White, and Vanderbilt. And Sinclair. Reacher and Nagley got in, and the door hissed shut behind them, and the bus took off. Not a long ride. Around the Alsen-Ulster Lake, to a large and imposing but slightly odd building. It looked like a copy of the White House, done purely from memory by a builder who had visited once as a kid. Inside, Bishop greeted them and showed them their room. Mostly desks and phones and fax machines and copy machines and telex machines and printers and bulky computer terminals with dirty beige keyboards. Bishop said the phones were set up as a replica of the McLean switchboard. Locally, only Griesmann had been given the numbers, in his case, without being told their location. It was Griesmann who called first, with a problem. Reacher picked up, and Griesmann said, "Don't put me on speaker." "Why not?" "I screwed up. Or my department did. Which is the same thing." "What happened?" "I think we lost Riley. Somehow, he was in a hit-and-run accident about 2 hours after you and I left. He was driving a car and he hit a bicycle. He was full of champagne, no doubt. A witness described him perfectly. She was shown Helmut Klopp's sketch and made a positive ID. It's all right there in the traffic division's log. So your guy missed him coming out. At one point, he was talking to a traffic cop. It might have happened then. But either way, you don't know where Wiley is. Not with an acceptable degree of certainty." "Is that something they teach you to say?" "It sounds sober and mature and burdened down with technicalities." Reacher said, "Shit happens. Get over it." Griesmann said, "I'm sorry we missed him. Don't worry about it. I'll maintain the surveillance as long as I can. Thank you." Reacher hung up and told the story, and Sinclair asked everyone's first question for them when she said, "Was that the delivery? Did we miss it? Was he so stressed he knocked the bicycle over?" "Too soon, surely," Vanderbilt said. "It was the middle of the first night. He can't have been paid yet, so he won't have delivered yet. Not unless he's really dumb." "Worst case, he was gone to the airport," Landry said, "for the early flight to Zurich. Maybe he'd rather wait a day or two there than here, in which case he took the delivery with him. If it's small, to swap in the banker's office, like Reacher said." "We should be watching the airports," Waterman said.
"We are," Sinclair said.
Both airports had closed-circuit television. CIA arranged temporary feeds. Unofficial, so they won't last long. But so far, Wiley has not passed through.